Hi, I'm Allison.
And I'm Larissa. We're two working moms
and real-life friends
on the journey to improving our family's health.
We're digging through the facts and fads around living a cleaner, greener lifestyle
with plenty of cocktails.
Whether you've taken the plunge like Larissa
or just a little crunchy curious like Allison, this podcast's for you.
Welcome to the Crunchy Cocktail Hour.
Hey guys, happy Friday. This is Larissa, and as always, I'm here with Allison.
Hi, everyone.
But today we're going to be talking all about my favorite beverage, coffee.
Your vanilla latte, which you're, what, 98%?
99% made up of vanilla latte.
I do love
it. As I like to say. So it's definitely not the episode where I'm going to tell you to drink more coffee or stop drinking coffee, but
Definitely not stop drinking coffee. Okay. You can't tell anybody that.
No, I don't think anybody would listen. But wanted to bring you some cool stuff that you might not know. Some good, some bad, and maybe just a few little fun facts. So what are we drinking today?
So I had to, of course, make a coffee beverage.
Of course.
So this, I don't know what to call this. I think I'm going to call it a toasted marshmallow coffee martini.
Sure.
Does that sound good?
Sure. I mean, like it tastes good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a delicious one, but it's got a toasted marshmallow garnish and it just adds that nice little bit of smoke. So cheers.
Cheers. So before we officially dive in, I wanted to talk about something really quick. So, and it's funny, perfect for the topic of coffee and energy and all of that. You and I, we've been struggling making this podcast from a time perspective lately.
Yeah, definitely lately. It's been a bit of a struggle.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of you guys have been listening to us for a little while know that Allison and I work full time and we're also full time moms. And, you know, finding this podcast and this creative outlet for us has been a gift, I think.
Yeah, it's wonderful. A struggle, a worthwhile struggle.
Yes. And we've continued to do it. And, you know, I wanted to bring this up because we've definitely had kind of those moments of when are we going to do this? When are we going to be able to put the time into it? Because we certainly want to. And sometimes life is just busy and it's difficult to find those times. And I'm sure that all of you listening can relate. But it's been interesting that in those times where it just seems impossible, you know, one of you will reach out and tell us something that you've tried that we've suggested that worked really well for you, or reached out to ask for a suggestion, or, you know, written us a fantastic review to let us know that what we do here makes a difference for you. And I think those are the things that really fuel us and keep us going. And so if anything, I just wanted to say thank you.
Yes.
Because I think you and I both really appreciate it. And, you know, while this is really fun for us, and we always say it like scratches a creative itch in our brain, we do also hope that it makes a difference for someone and that someone does something with this information. So I think I just want to say thank you.
Yeah. And just a thank you for letting us be a part of your day, you know, whether you're commuting or you listen to us while you're cooking or I don't know, to tune out the world. Just thank you for listening and letting us be a part of that. And, you know, for those that reach out or comment or post reviews, I can't tell you how much it just gives us that little bit of pep in our step.
Yes, it's a good
a little
way
bit
to put
of an
it.
Oomph. And so, yeah, reiterate, Larissa, it's just a thank you to everyone. Yeah.
So let's get into our topic. But of course, I want to do a disclaimer today because I think there's a couple of touchy things here today. So, you know, any kind of opinions that we express here are our own based on our research, based on our experience. I certainly want to make sure that no one takes any of this and uses it to treat anything or make any kind of broad decisions about their health. So please take what we say with a grain of salt. Do your own research. If there's something really concerning to you, please definitely see a medical professional, which we are not.
Certainly not.
So coffee. It's interesting. I started to look up like, well, how many cups of coffee do we like drink a day as a, you know, worldwide or in the US? And so the last statistic I was able to find, which I believe was from last year, is 2.25 billion cups of coffee are consumed worldwide on a daily basis, which is just
I'm only responsible for about half of that.
Right?
No, that's so in the other unreal. Half,
we're done.
What else? Are you guys just needing coffee out there?
And so 400 million of that is in the US. So it's like roughly 2.7 cups of coffee per day. So I don't know that I drink exactly 8 ounces. I probably drink slightly bit more, but I'm usually a one cup of coffee per day person. Like I have a coffee in the morning. Sometimes that cup of coffee kind of like lingers and I sip on it throughout the day, but I don't usually get a second.
So I'm now a one cup of coffee girls, and I now can't have coffee past noonish or else I'm kind of up for the night. I used to have 3 cups of coffee a day, but they weren't just regular coffee. I would have a coffee in the morning. I'd have a latte at lunch, and then I'd have a red eye at 3. But do you know what
a red eye?
It's a coffee with a shot of espresso.
Okay.
And I would have that at lunch.
So just like some coffee with your coffee.
I would just so much caffeine. Wow. And so but tapering, when you're having that much coffee, you have to taper it back slowly or else you get that caffeine headache. Yeah. Wow, that makes me sound horrible.
Well, okay, but you're now at a different place.
I am. I'm down to one.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I don't not go get something midday once in a while. But just like in general, like, especially if I'm working from home or something, I don't find myself going and making myself a second cup of coffee. It's maybe when I'm at the office and there is a Starbucks nearby and it's just so accessible.
Oh, and then an espresso after like one of those really long, luxurious meals or something. That's always
nice. Of course, you're having a long, luxurious meal. Fancy pants.
You do sometimes too, I'm sure.
So it's coffee has been around, you know, for centuries. And there's actually like a lot of, you know, rumor and lore and everything about like where it came from and how it came to be. The one that I stumbled upon consistently was this one about, it's like an Ethiopian legend where a coffee is discovered by a goat herder named Kaldi. And so his goats were like running around and they were eating these berries and then they were like super energetic and like freaking out. So the goat herder himself tried the berries as well, and he had a similar reaction. And so he took the berries to like a monastery, and some monk tried it, and coffee was born.
That is, I kind of like that legend.
It's bizarre.
A goat herder. A goat herding monk.
Well, I don't know if he was a monk, but he took it to a monk. Maybe he was a monk.
He knew monks. So
he knew monks.
He was a monk buddy.
Monk adjacent?
Monk adjacent.
I don't know. But the one interesting thing I really learned about when I was reading the history is I kept reading like that he ate the berries and ate the berries.
Actually,
and I was
like, saying that.
What? So apparently it's a fruit. Apparently coffee is a fruit.
That.
And it has like a pit that like looks like a little berry, and that's what the coffee is. And because it looks like a bean, everyone calls it beans, but it's a fruit.
So we're essentially having fruit juice when we have coffee, which sounds way healthier.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to start using that.
Perfect. And the other really interesting thing from a history perspective that I read about is the kind of major attempts in history to outlaw coffee or ban coffee.
And what was the caffeine was what they were trying to
avoid?
Well,
it was all different reasons. So the first one I read about was in Mecca in 1511, and they said that it like created radical thinking. So I don't know if like people had energy and they were coming up with ideas, but they were like
productive.
Yeah, they were like, we will not have this. People are thinking for themselves. Ban it.
All right, I can see that.
In the 16th century in Italy, they thought it was satanic.
So I could see that.
They tried to ban. Well, it depends. Like, are we talking one cup or 5 cups?
Or that red eye at 3.
Right. So Constantinople in 1623, I couldn't figure out why they were trying to ban it, but it was so forbidden that if you were found drinking coffee or in possession of coffee, the first offense was a beating.
Jeez.
And the second offense was being sewn into a leather bag and thrown into the river.
So, but wouldn't that kill you?
Yes.
Oh my God. I know some people that it would still be worth the risk, though. Some people love their coffee.
Come on.
I'm just saying.
Come on.
Hey, I mean, you know, that beating might not be that bad.
So the next one's funny because, so this was in Sweden in 1746, and not only did they ban coffee, but also coffee paraphernalia.
So like coffee mugs?
So like cups and saucers or like anything that was meant to be drinking coffee out of, it was just banned. And they actually at that time also did studies with coffee on convicted murderers. They would like keep giving them coffee to see how long it would take to kill them.
And do we know how long?
I think I've read something like 100 consecutive cups would kill you.
Oh my God. That's a horrible, horrible way to die.
I don't
die.
Know why I'm laughing. It's so absurd.
That's so ridiculous.
And so strange to think about that that was potentially real.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
Oh my God.
But the last one, you know, was in Prussia in 1777. And this one is funny because, you know, you and I love our beer. And so the leader at that time thought that coffee was interfering with beer consumption and beer sales. So they were like, coffee's got to go.
We got to keep our beer drinking.
That's
up.
Right.
Forget productivity. Let's get drunk.
Forget it.
All right. Prussia might be my spot.
Yes. And then the last thing that I thought was just really interesting was in 1991 at the University of Cambridge. They had some kind of like war room. They were studying for something or they were doing some kind of experiment. I don't know what was going on, but they had just like a ton of people in a lab room, and the coffee room or whatever, the kitchenette, was kind of like far away from whatever room they were in. So someone installed like an ongoing feed of the coffee pot.
Okay.
So that people could just like check on the camera and see if there was coffee in the coffee pot, so they didn't have to like make the walk. And that was the inspiration for the first webcam.
Oh my gosh. Just to know if there was coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that fun?
That is fun.
So let's get into kind of all about coffee. And this is a really kind of perfect time to talk about it because coffee has been in the news. I don't know if you've seen this. It's definitely not in popular news. It's in the weird news I read.
That's why you get all those weird
recesses
ads to you.
That's right. But so coffee has been in the news because of a chemical called acrylamide. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't. Okay. No.
So it's a white, odorless crystal compound that basically forms when sugars and amino acids are heated above a certain temperature. And it is a carcinogen.
Okay.
So it's in cigarette smoke. It's in potato products. It's in grain products. And it's in coffee. And it's just like those starchy things heated up. It creates this natural chemical reaction and produces acrylamide.
And this is something that they've just discovered was in coffee?
So no, this has been known since 2002. There's a Swedish scientist that discovered it in food. And it's been known about for a really long time. I don't know if you remember in 2008. You weren't kind of like in tune to all these things like about foods at
that
time.
I honestly thought you were going to say, I don't know if you were born yet.
No.
That's honestly thought what I thought you were going to say. I'm not that much younger than you.
No. 2008. Do you remember a big lawsuit about potato chips and labels on potato chips? Does that ring a bell at all?
It doesn't, actually.
Okay.
I remember that there was a big thing about trans fats.
There is a thing about trans fats.
Yeah.
But there was also a thing about acrylamide. So... Yeah. There was a big lawsuit. I think it was put on by the attorney general, but essentially they were saying, now that we know this is forming, potato chips and potato products are a big culprit of producing acrylamide in their production process. And potato chip companies and companies that make these types of foods, we want you to get the levels of acrylamide down to kind of an acceptable standard, or put a label on your product that says your product causes cancer or may cause cancer.
So I'm assuming nobody put that label.
I think people started to, but most companies, like I think Procter & Gamble was one of the first ones that said, all right, we're going to work on it and we're going to fix it. So it started there. And this small nonprofit called, I'm trying to find their name, the Council of Education and Research on Toxins, that's in California. They've been fighting like an 8-year long battle with Starbucks and like 90 other coffee companies for them to do something about acrylamide and coffee.
Jeez. Okay. Did not know this.
And they just won.
Oh, great.
So essentially, like the coffee manufacturer. So based on the wind, the coffee manufacturers, coffee shops, anywhere where you can get this stuff. I say this stuff like it's like coffee? They have to put a label on it that says this may cause cancer.
Wow.
Yes.
Or can they do something to help lower the.
Yeah, that's an option. And the coffee companies are essentially saying, if I stop producing coffee in the way that creates this acrylamide and we take out acrylamide from the process, the coffee's not going to taste the same. And so, but they weren't able to, the coffee companies weren't able to prove their case and say that it's not harmful. So they lost. And I think they're now, this was literally days ago. So they're now in this place of they have time to appeal it if they want to, but.
But they don't really have a case.
But they don't have a case. They're going to have to abide by it. And again, only in California. But what's interesting is that with, you know, coffee that you might get at the store, you know, they mass produce those things and then it goes out to many states. So it might, you might see it in your own grocery store just because of kind of where distribution is done and where that product is distributed to. So the thing is, there's not any links right now. There's no studies that say there is a direct link between coffee and cancer. And there's actually a lot of studies that are now showing that there's actually some decreased risks to certain cancers with coffee, but there are some studies about acrylamide specifically. Most of them are with like a rat population, but it's a carcinogen, right? Mm-hmm. And carcinogen is kind of, it may cause cancer, it might not. I'm sure you know someone who smoked every day of their life and never got a thing, and someone who's never smoked a day in their life and got some sort of cancer. Yeah. So, but, you know, I have kind of, I'm struggling with my thoughts about all this because I think I'm really grateful for companies like the nonprofit that fights this kind of fight. I mean, they've been fighting it for 8 years and nobody even knew about it. Right. Yeah. And it's resources, it's time, and they're not making money. But I kind of have a thing about slapping a label on something that says this causes cancer. And because I think you're going to get one of two reactions from it. Somebody's going to say, I don't care. Like some people do with cigarettes. They mm-hmm. know some of the downsides of cigarettes and they do it anyway. Or someone's just going to freak out.
Yeah.
And what that label doesn't do is give anybody any information. So what does that mean? It might cause cancer. Are you familiar at all with Prop 65? Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
So this was also another regulation that came out in California. And basically they identified like 900 or so chemical compounds that if they were in your product or part of the manufacturing process, they had to put a label on whatever that product is. Clothes, beauty products, food, it doesn't matter what it is. They have to stick this label on it. So I remember getting a pair of shoes for my son from Target and I got it in the mail and I'm opening the box and the outside of the box says, this may cause cancer. And it's shoes.
So what was the product that was in it?
I don't know.
It doesn't give you any more information.
There's no information. And also, you know, it's one of those things like this is shoes. Okay. Is there something so powerful on the way this pair of shoes was created that I shouldn't put it on my kids' feet?
Just don't let them eat the shoes.
Or is it like, yeah, like don't eat the shoes. Don't lick the shoes. Like whatever it is. And so, you know, I let my kid wear the shoes, but it's just an example of what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
The product may cause cancer. Okay. What about it? Now what? So
yeah, that's a good point.
I find it valuable because it creates awareness, but then there's no information behind it. And I think then people can't act in any way or make a decision. So somebody's either going to not care or they're going to freak out and stop drinking coffee.
And I feel like it's more likely than not care. I don't know how many times people have said, God, everything causes cancer these days.
Oh, yeah.
Like people say that all the time and then they just sort of ignore it. Where if maybe if they just had more information about what it specifically was, then it wouldn't just be the, well, I can disregard this because it's the newest thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I will give you kind of my two cents. You know, there is no way to stay away from acrylamide. Like I said, it's in baked goods, it's in potato products, it's in grain, it's anything that's got it like a starchy sugar in it. It's going to have it. And there's just no way to be away from it. It's just not possible. Now, like, and even the European Union has like acceptable levels of acrylamide because we just know it's inevitable. And when it comes to coffee specifically, if we focus on that, you know, the amount of acrylamide in a given product can vary based on what it is that you're drinking. So my two cents is you don't need to stop drinking coffee. You don't need to stop eating all foods that exist because lots of them have this because you just can't. But there are a couple of things that you can be mindful of to limit exposure. So acrylamide peaks very early in the roasting process. And remember, I was saying that it is from kind of heating those products at a certain temperature. So it happens in the during the roasting process for coffee. So, and it peaks at the very beginning of the roasting process and then slowly declines. So light-colored coffee beans have more acrylamide than a dark roast that's heated for like longer periods of time.
That works for me. I like really dark
coffee. There you go. So you're better off with a darker bean. Then there is Arabica versus Robusta, which they're different beans. They have a different taste. They're made essentially the same way, but they're just different. And Robusta is most of the time used in instant coffees. Mm-hmm. And so most of the time, like, this is almost like something not to look out for, really, because most of the time when you're getting coffee that you're going to make, it's going to be Arabica beans. And so you want Arabica, and then you want to stay away from instant coffee. It's like the worst offender.
Easy.
Done. So I still know people who drink instant coffee. So, you know, that's kind of the only tips I can give. You know, I don't think anybody should panic and stop drinking coffee. I don't think anyone should drink more coffee. I think you can do with whatever you're comfortable with and what you're used to. I think just keep in mind, if you can drink a darker roast, that's going to be better, and to stay away from instant coffee. It's all you can really do. It's one of those things that is just out of your control.
Yeah.
And I sincerely hope that, you know, these do-gooders, right, that are trying to create awareness about some of these things, that some of that money now that they've kind of at least won this small fight, that some of the money then does start to go to education. Because with that label, it's great, but it's just the tiniest step. Yeah. And we can spin off into other topics, but I think that's in general what's wrong with the food system and why people don't know how to eat correctly, because it's labels without information.
And there's so much misinformation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Agreed. Absolutely. So let's move on to some good news.
Yeah. So tell me why I should drink coffee.
Yes. So the biggest thing is antioxidants. We've talked about antioxidants to nauseam, I feel like, on this podcast. When it comes to skincare and other things, it has a crazy amount of antioxidants, like more than any fruit and vegetable combined.
Again, I'm coming back to it being essentially my daily intake of fruit.
Yeah. Well, I guess I shouldn't say fruit and vegetable because it is a fruit. So free radicals create oxidative stress in our bodies, and we use antioxidants, whether we're eating them or putting them on our skin or otherwise, to keep cells from damaging. And, you know, that creates internal tissue troubles that can lead to other things, as well as aging us. So it is a great source of antioxidants. The other thing is it burns fat. It's like one of the only natural substances out there that has been scientifically proven to burn fat. And, you know, if you've ever looked at like the label on any weight loss product, you will see it almost always has caffeine in it, because it boosts your metabolic rate. And so you burn fat. But I have seen studies that show, you know, if you were just a long-term coffee drinker, then the percentage of how much it helps you with fat loss probably goes down because your body's just used to it.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I don't know. And I didn't really see or read much that talks about, you know, should you vary that in any way to help? But
I just always come back to the modest supermodel diet of coffee and cigarettes.
Well, hey,
it's effective and it'll kill you.
Pretty much. So type 2 diabetes is the most common form of diabetes that affects the population. And that's where your body is insulin resistant. So there are studies that show at varying percentages a decrease in risk for developing type 2 diabetes with the consumption of coffee.
That's incredible.
So I saw one study that says like 20%, another study that says 67%. I'm sure a lot of that varies too with, are you drinking one cup or are you drinking five cups? I don't know.
Yeah. And how much cream and sugar are you putting into that cup?
Right. But there was one study that I saw that I thought was interesting. It basically took, I think, 18 to 20 separate studies and combined them in aggregate. And what that study found is that a 7% decrease of development of type 2 diabetes with each cup of coffee.
So the more coffee you drink, the more less likely you are?
Yeah. And so, and it's interesting, right? Because this is where we come back to the disclaimer of like, don't start, you know, tripling up on your coffee. But I wonder, you know, if this is one of those things that like, you could be put on a regimen of something if you are at risk, if you're predisposed based on genetics or otherwise. And I'll be honest and say, I don't know if type 2 diabetes is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I wonder what it is.
Don't try this at home.
I wonder if it's the caffeine or what it is in coffee.
I'm not sure. And the other one that I thought was very interesting too is it has some protective effects on the liver. So there's diseases like, we'll pick hepatitis, for example, that can cause cirrhosis of the liver. And that's when your liver slowly gets replaced by scar tissue. So coffee doesn't necessarily stop any of those diseases, but it can actually help prevent or decrease the risk of cirrhosis.
Hmm.
And then the study I read was four cups can reduce the likelihood of cirrhosis by 80%.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's a one cup gives you 20. Like, I'm not sure if it breaks down as easily that way. But this is another one of those where I wonder if you are at risk, I wonder if there's some kind of regimen that some people are put on around
this.
Or
if you're a big drinker, maybe you can help protect that liver.
Coffee and booze.
Yeah. Well, it's like everybody has their wine at night, their coffee in the morning. So
right.
Maybe it's just cleaning ourselves out.
Totally. And of course, you know, we just got done talking about possible carcinogenic effects and cancer-causing substances in coffee, but liver cancer, which is the third leading cancer, and colorectal cancer, which is the fourth leading cancer, several cups of coffee per day has been shown to decrease the risk of both of those types of cancers.
Hmm. That's really interesting. The colorectal doesn't surprise me at all, but liver does.
That one makes sense.
Yeah,
right?
That I get. But liver is surprising.
Yeah.
I know coffee is a diuretic, so I'd be interested to understand the effect on kidneys, which I did not see in here, but I was just curious.
Yeah. And then, you know, the best benefit of all, the energy kick.
Not the energy kick. And the flavor. I just like a good cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I like dark, almost tar-like.
Almost tar-like.
Oh, yeah. If you can't see the bottom of your cup, that's a good cup of coffee. If you can't even see the edge.
What kind of coffee can you see the bottom of your cup? That's
some people
like,
drink really like diner coffee. You can always see the bottom of your cup. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
There's so much coffee I won't drink.
Sometimes I wonder if I really get the energy kick in the morning or if it's really all about the habit for me. But like the habit of like the warm or cold cup of coffee and just kind of like, I don't know, the slow wake up with the caffeine. I don't know.
Yeah. It'd be an interesting experiment. Have you ever stopped drinking coffee?
Yeah. I switched to herbal coffee, I remember, when I was pregnant. It definitely
herbal
took,
coffee? Herbal tea?
Herbal coffee.
What is that?
There's a coffee called Ticino that I drank when I was pregnant, and it's herbal coffee. It doesn't taste like coffee.
Okay.
But it tastes more like coffee than tea.
All right, fair.
So I have taken a break from it. You know what? Actually, thinking back now, I had like a wicked headaches at first, so I'm sure that it was the caffeine.
Oh, I go through real caffeine withdrawal.
Yeah.
I'm better now that I'm not having as much coffee, but if when I haven't had my cup, I'll be like, why am I feeling so terrible? Oh, yeah. I didn't have my coffee yet. It's the worst.
Yeah. So, you know, I hope this is a good balance, right? You know, I did want to address what's floating around in the news for those of you that, you know, might have heard it, but do want to back it up with the fact that there are a lot of positive benefits from other things that are in coffee. And I guess that remains to be seen what's done with all this. Are people going to make some kind of effort to decrease the levels or completely remove it from the manufacturing process or figure out, you know, sometimes I wonder if they mess with the production process, will they introduce something else you don't want? You just never know. But for now, you know, it's just more of an awareness thing. And, you know, the little changes around, you know, the dark bean, the light bean, that type of stuff, it is in our control and something that we could do.
Nice.
And sounds like no change for you.
No, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
The other thing that I wanted to touch on is responsible purchase of coffee. So I think if you're someone who buys coffee to have at home, you've likely seen different labels on the packages. And, you know, I don't know if the average person knows what fair trade means or what it means that it's organic or otherwise. So I thought it'd be good to touch on a couple of those. So let's start with USDA organic. So essentially, you know, that is the most, I guess, most detailed process there is in terms of checks and balances of coffee. So there is, you know, very specific standards that it has to be held up to from the Department of Agriculture. And so it's everything from soil quality to, you know, how things are grown, how they're packaged, what they're packaged in, and otherwise, right? So, and it's a government agency that holds everybody accountable to that.
Including import.
Most
of our coffee is imported.
Exactly. Including import. So that's an important one. And then there's fair trade. I think fair trade is one like everybody's heard of. Mm-hmm. And so essentially that says there's a non-government governing entity, I think it's called like Fair Trade International, that sets a specific process and standard around what should be required. And so they source from small scale farmers that they have figured out what a fair wage is for those people. Mm-hmm. Some people will argue that fair trade doesn't mean anything because it is not a governing body, and because, you know, who's to say what, you know, that what they decide is fair and can you go around it? But I think it's pretty good. I think that their goals are there for a reason. They're trying to do good. And then there's also fair trade certified, where it's not meant to be from small scale farmers. It's meant to be from large plantations. But then there are now a ton of rules that need to be followed per their guidance around, you know, what a fair wage is, what the conditions are for the workers, and things like that.
And all of this was put into place because there were issues in the coffee industry around workers' conditions, the ability for farmers to make a fair wage from their product. There was a lot of corruption in coffee. And so I think this has really helped that.
Yeah. I mean, coffee is, you know, aside from gasoline, the second most traded commodity and imported. And so when you've got something that's very competitive and a moneymaker and labor intensive, you've always got someone who is, you know, trying to cut corners around it and, you know, in many cases, exploit people for money. So all of these things that have been put in place in order to try to regulate that.
Yeah.
And the last one I wanted to touch on is direct trade. So this is working directly with the farmer. And there's no regulation around that. There's no rules to follow. It's kind of two parties and what they agree upon. I have seen many coffee companies say that fair trade, like I was saying, is not the most ethical thing because they make their own rules and they just rather go straight to the farmer. But then, you know, nobody's setting a rule. Nobody's regulating. And I actually think that there's a lot to be, you know, there's a lot of gaps that can be created there. So all of those things are at least the organic, fair trade, and fair trade certified. There's also a couple of others that are focused around shade grown and like whether or not they disrupt the ecosystem. There's some certifications around that. There's also a rainforest one if your coffee is pulled in from somewhere local to a rainforest and making sure that things are harvested and manufactured in a way that doesn't hurt that ecosystem.
Oh, very neat.
So those are just good ones to know for when you see a label at the grocery store and you want to know what it means. And I don't know, thinking through what each of these standards are, you might gravitate to one and say, like, this is the one that's for me. This makes me feel most confident.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, I don't care. I really like that coffee and I'm just going to keep buying it.
Fun sidebar. When we were in Costa Rica many, many years ago, we went to a fair trade coffee farm down there and did coffee tasting. And it was many years ago, and my parents still have their coffee directly shipped from that farm.
No way.
Yeah. So I think that probably would be a bit more of a direct trade situation, but it was a phenomenal experience. Really neat. Yeah. And the coffee's amazing.
All right. Well, maybe we need to give them a shout and link people to this.
Yeah,
I will. Can they buy it direct?
I believe you could buy it directly. Okay. I don't think they have some kind of weird hookup or something. Okay. I think now you can. But there's situations like this all over the world where you can go and visit these coffee farmers and they will do little coffee tastings of their different types of beans and you can see how it's produced.
I've never thought of a coffee tasting. That's such a cool idea.
It's really awesome. It was,
and I was completely hopped up.
Yes. It's similar to the way you're supposed to do wine tasting. You're only supposed to do like a quick sip and I believe they have spittoons and everything, but, yeah, it's awesome.
Every time I've ever been to a wine tasting, I just drink it. And I'm like, this whole spitting thing.
No, why would you spit
out good wine?
It defeats the purpose.
Totally.
With coffee, maybe don't have too much.
Yeah. So maybe we also touch on a couple of trends in coffee. And I would guarantee that most people have heard of most of these. But, you know, bulletproof coffee continues to be kind of a big one that we all hear about. So essentially, it is loading up your coffee with different ingredients for the health benefits of it all. So there is a company called Bulletproof that launched all of this, which is why it's named after that. But you don't necessarily have to use their products and their coffee. But essentially, you want a high quality coffee. You want, you know, so not instant.
Mm-hmm. Moral of this story, no instant coffee.
Just never instant coffee. Just even, it doesn't even taste good. Come on. It has MCT oil. So Bulletproof, the company, has something that they call Brain Octane, which essentially is MCT oil. So it's medium chain triglycerides, which is like the good fatty acids extracted from coconut.
Oh, neat.
From coconut oil. Grass-fed butter or ghee, which is clarified butter. And then people add kind of whatever else they want to it. People add powder adaptogens to it, which we've talked about. You mm-hmm. can add collagen to it. People sprinkle cinnamon in it. You know, whatever you like in that combination of flavors. And usually you blend it together so it becomes like this very frothy latte-like coffee.
I've done like variations on this. So when I was paleo, I would put butter in my coffee.
Okay.
And then I put my collagen in my coffee because I find that it helps. I just like the flavor. So I think I'd try this and I like the idea of blending it and making it nice and frothy.
I've made like a matcha Bulletproof, which essentially you just need a high grade caffeine. So you could do this with matcha as well.
Can I admit something to you?
What?
I hate matcha.
Really?
I think it's awful.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Well, but here's my tip. It doesn't matter that it's matcha. I have found that, so most likely you have collagen that dissolves.
Yeah.
It's called collagen. There's beef gelatin, which you can use to make like jelly, you know, gummies and things like that. If you actually use gelatin when you put it in the blender, it gets really frothy, like way frothier.
And then if you leave it, does it gel?
Congeals.
Think about what it's doing in your stomach.
But the whole thing is you're drinking it in a hot liquid. So as long as it's still hot, it's fine.
I know, but I guess just accidentally just leaving it out.
Just drink your regular collagen. Forget my tip.
No, I'm done. It's fine.
So I have not tried this combination of things myself yet. I do plan to do it. I feel like every time I go to do it, I'm like, but I'm not eating meat, so I can't have the grass-fed butter or whatever it is, or dairy. But I do want to try it. And I have, like you, like I have collagen in my coffee every morning. I've done adaptogens in my coffee, but I just haven't done the kind of true what a bulletproof coffee is supposed to be. But essentially, it's supposed to try to give you lasting energy. Some combination of the caffeine and the MCT oil is supposed to give you energy without the crash, which you can sometimes experience with coffee. Because it's got the butter or the ghee in it, it's got some healthy fats and nutrients. It's supposed to keep you satiated and potentially get you through your morning. Some people replace breakfast with Bulletproof because, you know, a lot of the breakfasts we have, you know, people have cereals or, you know, things that are kind of carbohydrates and sugary, and you crash from that and it doesn't last you very long. So this is supposed to kind of maintain you for a little bit longer and suppress hunger. And then again, the combination of the MCT oil and the caffeine slowly releasing is supposed to just really wake up your brain. I think that's why Bulletproof, the brand, calls their MCT oil brain octane, because it's supposed to like flip the switch on your brain. So it's definitely an interesting concept, and I do want to try it. Yeah, sounds like you would as well.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So the other one is white coffee. Have you heard of white coffee? It's like seemingly popped up everywhere. Like Starbucks has it now. Everybody
has it. Espresso. So essentially this sounds like the opposite of what I drink.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably not my thing.
So it's essentially like the same beans that, but they just don't roast them as long. They're under roasted.
It sounds like a mistake somebody made. And they're like, let's label this and call it. We'll just say it's still coffee.
Yeah. So the thing is, it's supposed to be less bitter because the longer you roast, the more of like the oils off the coffee come off.
So the thing that makes coffee good.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be a little less bitter, a little more earthy. There's a lot of claims about it having more caffeine because it hasn't burnt off. I don't really get it. I don't really get how that is.
But the darker the coffee.
I don't know. Okay. That's why I think it's like not a thing. But that's like the claim. It's like drink this for a bigger jolt. But I think it's a lie.
Interesting.
But I have seen a lot of coffee shops starting to do this. So I haven't tried it. So I can't vouch for it.
And this is probably a no from me.
I will tell you this, going back to our acrylamide conversation, right? They still heat the beans over I think the temperature you have to heat over is like 250 degrees or something like that for it to form, for it to have the reaction. I think normal coffee goes up to like 450. Mm-hmm. And this is still over the 250. And again, they are not roasting them for as long as dark roast. So I think this would be like, for me, on the level of an instant.
Yeah, probably. From what you're saying, it makes sense.
I tried to look and see if there was any information about white coffee and acrylamide, but there really isn't.
I don't think white coffee is going to
work. And so that's just me kind of deducing from the things that I've read about what under roasting a bean, but still getting it over a temperature high enough for the reaction.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So avoid it because it's gross and because it.
I mean, you don't know it's gross.
Making an assumption.
That's what the disclaimer is for, right?
Yeah. We are putting out claims that could mean nothing.
And then my very favorite, cold brew.
Cold brew is good.
I drink it all year round. I drink cold coffee in the winter, in the summer.
See, Kyle prefers iced coffee to cold brew.
Wait, tell me about that.
It's a different flavor. So iced coffee is brewed normally.
Yeah.
And then chilled. Whereas cold brew is brewed cold.
Yeah.
So the flavor is different.
It is different, but I think that the cold brew ends up sweeter.
I guess that's what he doesn't like.
Oh, you guys and your like tar black coffee.
Oh, yeah. I love the flavor of coffee and I like to mask it with almost nothing.
It's a nice way to put it. So with the cold brew, there's a ton of different ways to do it. You can do it in a French press. They sell fancy things and instruments that you can make the coffee in. My husband and I do it at home with a glass jar we bought that has a seal tight lid and a nut milk bag.
Oh,
so
nice.
Literally he does 4 cups of water to 1 cup of coffee, like, or the 4-to-1 ratio of however much you're doing it, puts the coffee in the nut milk bag, seals it up, and puts it in overnight. And then, you know,
and overnight is all it takes.
Yeah. And that will last us like a week based on the size of the jar we have, which I don't know offhand, but it's so nice because it, you know, it's just like ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready first thing in the morning. And we haven't done this, but I keep meaning to, when I find more time, is to also make some coffee ice cubes. Because
yes,
I'm totally guilty of, even if I cold brew, I still put ice cubes in the coffee and inevitably they start to melt. And I just it's like I keep drinking coffee all day long, but it's just because it's slowly melting.
Slowly diluted.
Yeah. But I would imagine that would taste really good if
that would,
you know, just melt it a little
more. If you like some kind of a milk in your coffee, you could do a milk ice cube.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that would be nice. And then it would slowly melt in.
Yeah.
And it would melt faster, but it would still be really nice.
Yeah. Now I want another cup of coffee.
We can just keep
sipping. I keep drinking my coffee drink. So that's all we have today about coffee. It sounds like you definitely learned a few things today.
I did. But I also, it did make me really want another cup of coffee as well. Maybe we'll make a trip out. I'll get you to try a red eye.
I would. And if anyone's tried white coffee, because now Allison's making me not want to try it. If anyone's tried it, let us know what you think.
Or if you're like really into like any kind of a blonde roast, or if you prefer your coffee lighter, I'd be interested to hear sort of what your take is on it.
Totally. So as always, anything we mentioned today, you can find in show notes at crunchycocktailhour.com. I'll definitely link a couple of these studies for you that I found.
And actually the nut milk bag that you use for your cold
brew. Yeah, everything we got for a couple bucks on Amazon. So I can definitely link for you what I use because it's not fancy. And I also found that the kind of cold brew mint products are really small in size. So you make like 2 cups of coffee and then you have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
So our intent was to get like a nice big jar. Drink recipe for today's amazing concoction, silverlineandwine.com and Pinterest at Crunchy Cocktail Hour. And of course, give us a follow on social media of your choice, Crunchy Cocktail Hour. And subscribe if you like what you hear. Leave us a 5-star review and some thoughts. We would certainly appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.